Hello and welcome to Mimi UU. I'm Mimi Nicklin, the host of the show. This podcast is anonymous and it's audio only, without names, to protect from unconscious bias or judgment and to allow true empathy to grow. The goal of the show is to share diverse stories from around the world by giving people a platform to share openly so that other people, like you, can understand diverse realities from around the globe. We exist to create empathy and not just talk about it. Welcome to Mimi UU.
Welcome back to Mimi UU. It always gives me the greatest of pleasure to hear from people on the other side of the world from me who give up their time zones to join me for these conversations. Today's is no different. We are going to be looking at gender, justice, body autonomy, and the reproductive rights of women all over the world. It is amazing to me how much the rules, the regulations, and the opinions on these things change across the world, and how, as our guest will share today, life, our life as women, isn't always actually what appears to matter. So today's guest is a body rights and abortion activist. She's joining me from the other side of the planet to share why she does the work she does and what that means to women everywhere. But before we do that, as per every show, I just want to check with you. This is an anonymous first show, and we won't share your identity unless you choose to do so. How does that sound to you?
Yeah, it sounds perfect. Thank you.
Wonderful. Well, listen, welcome to Mimi UU. I know you're dialing in very early in the morning your time, and I'm absolutely thrilled that you could join us and share your story. So tell me why you came. Why did you want to join the show? What is your story about today?
Well, so thank you so much for the invitation to be here. I would like really to talk about how I end up being an abortion activist, because it's something that usually people even don't know that that exists, or people even don't know that there are people like me who spend our work and free time and hold our time and our energy to try to advocate for abortions and to try to advocate for a different abortion narrative. So I think that is an interesting conversation to have.
Oh, I couldn't agree more. Why don't we start with what is an abortion activist? You're absolutely right. It's not necessarily a term I've heard. Perhaps people in the audience have heard. So tell us, what does that mean? How do you identify as an abortion activist?
Yeah, well, the key question here is what you just mentioned. It's an out-identification, because I know that many people would say, oh, I'm pro-choice or things like that. I prefer to recognize myself as an abortion activist. And I personally define this as someone who work and advocate for a social and legal decriminalization of abortion. When I'm talking about social decriminalization, I'm talking about to break a stigma, to break taboo, and to talk about abortions as it is healthcare service. I'm talking about access as well. So I'm talking about legislations, how we can change legislations that create barriers regarding abortions, like create barriers for people who need to have an abortion. That's the reason because I prefer the terms abortion activist instead of a pro-choice, because I recognize that from a reality, from the reality of big part of the world, an abortion is not a choice, is many times a need. And that's something that we can start talking about during the conversation.
Absolutely. And I want to get to that. I want to really understand your opinions on that. But before we do unpack that as an area of your focus, how did you start this work? What led you to work in this space, to make this your passion?
Well, I will start with my life. Like, I became an abortion activist because I grew up in one of the countries that at the point I was a kid, it was one of the countries that it was between the 4% of countries that abortion was completely banned. I don't know if you have the dimension to understand what that it means, but it's the fact that abortion was totally legal restricted. So for giving a bit of context, when a country has this kind of regulation, if a woman needs an abortion because she was raped, she is forced to carry that pregnancy. Or if a woman needs an abortion to undergo a medical treatment, she would not be able to get the treatment and she would die. And that was exactly what happened. In 2006, I was still at a school and it was a woman needed a cancer treatment. She was a mom as well. She was a poor woman and the doctors could not support her with the cancer treatment because she was pregnant. So she needed first to go through an abortion in order to get the treatment. How the law was prohibiting the abortion, she called an organization, or well, she got support for an organization called Women's Link, and they support her through the legal process to request the decriminalization of abortion in 3 grounds. When the fetus is unable to live after birth, when it's a result of a rape or artificial insemination, or when the pregnant person's life is threatened. Mm-hmm. However, when the decision was done and say, yeah, the law say, yeah, you can have abortion in these cases, her cancer was too advanced and she could not get the treatment. For me, it was really shocking to see her in the news celebrating the court decision while she was condemned to die. Mm-hmm. And that for me was like shocking because, as I said, I was still at a school. And for me was this idea of the law was always protect what is right. And the law was always protect who is most, like who is in a vulnerable condition. But that wasn't it was not happening in this situation. The law was protecting more, the law was not protecting the life. The law was protecting some kind of values that they would not make sense in this case, specifically talking. Mm-hmm. I could not rationalize the situation at the time. But when you feel in your body that something is wrong and that something is like, okay, this is not well. And well, the life continue and there was something that it just keep in my mind, like this background noise that you have about something that happened. And then I decided to study sociology because I was really focused on this thing of gender justice. Being a sociologist, I started being a feminist. And that journey took me to work with these concepts of body and healthcare. And on part of that, I started making a research of women with breast cancer. And I did this research with a perspective of gender and class perspective. So, and then this experience again made me face against a reality that it was not the same to have breast cancer as someone with economic privilege, as someone who was not. And then I realized that a medical system was condemning you to die when you did not have the economic conditions. So it was something similar to happen before, but in this case, it was not the law. In this case, it was the medical structure and how the medical system worked in the country that I born. So again, was this thing, like it was life again telling me that not always what matters is the life. And that started moving many things inside me of how I can work against these inequalities that affecting especially women and especially poor women. And that's how I end up working in the field of reproductive rights, because I realized that this area was a poverty trap where they could not decide over their bodies, they could not plan their lives, but also they and us end up being victims of the patriarchal structure that doesn't not allow us to decide. So many cases, the women just are totally in control of their partners, of the state, of the medical system. They cannot decide and they cannot prioritize their own lives and their own project of life. And being there, like on with all these questions, I moved to Canada where abortion is totally legal. Well, not totally legal, but it's legal, it's accessible, and it's more accessible as my country at the time. So one of the first things that I hear there when I moved from a friend, she told me, oh, in Canada, how abortion is legal, everyone gets abortions the whole time. And then I realized that's true. People get abortions the whole time that they need it. But that's true in countries where abortion is restricted. People get abortions the whole time that they need it. The difference was that in Canada, people were getting safe abortions, while in my context, they were getting a stigma and unsafe abortions. Also, the other difference, they were keeping the abortions in secret because they were doing something outside of the law. But in the other case, in Canada, they were going to the doctor to have a medical treatment because it's medical care. On that way, so life started showing me like how different was the life for someone who could decide these kind of things and who lived this poverty trap. So I started to have these burning questions inside me, but also burning answers. And I started advocate at that point for all of what I will call body autonomy. And I start talking about all these things that people, yeah, they did not want to talk. And the first thing that I did was start to talk about consent and pleasure. Because, well, it was like, okay, so I see all these women having all these horrible decisions taken by third parties, like their partners, the state, and medical healthcare system. And there is no joy and no pleasure in our lives that can prioritize our own decisions and our own consent. Like being a self-advocate on these topics took me to give a conference on the Women Deliver Conference in 2019 in Vancouver. At that point, I was not living in Canada anymore. So it was cool to come back and then realize again in a space like that, how many women around the world were working for women's rights and how many of us, we were working for different partners. So while I was talking about pleasure, other people were talking about migration, but other people were talking about abortion. And at the end, we were just seeking for a joyful life for women and in general for people. So this experience was great. And I love to talk about sex and the fact that people were feeling so ashamed, but at the same time was a pretty fun topic and pretty easy topic to talk. In this conference as well, I met many people working with abortion rights. And I started to feel that it was something that was really necessary in my context for this story, which I have heard when I was a kid. Seeking information on that, I found an organization called IPAS, and they have some kind of toolkit for advocates to talk about abortion stigma. That was great. And I started making some like conversations spaces, like a safe spaces for talking about this. And I'm talking about the different experiences. This idea started when I was a regional leader, an organization called Girl Lab. And the girls used to start to invite me to be one of these persons to guide the conversation. And that was super cool because you realize how powerful was the fact to share the experience. So with that experience, that I realized how powerful was to share my experience with all the girls. Like even if I was still kind of a girl at the time, I was 21, I think so. But they were 17. My experience was enriching their lives, but also to hear their experience was filling up my life with hindsight. So it was really rich. And with this thing of IPAS, and they were saying the most important thing about breaking abortion stigma is to talk, is to break the silence regarding abortion, is to bring information to all the spaces. We had a podcast that we always say it called actually Abortion on the Table. That it means something like to put the topic always.
Actually allow people to talk about that and to have that conversation.
Yes, to invite people to have this conversation in different spaces. So that work took me to work in an organization that offer abortion information. Yeah, they offer abortion information more focused on the medical access, like medical part, so access to abortion. And that, with that, I start to have contact with many stories as the story that I have heard the first time in my life of this woman who died for the denial of an abortion, of a safe abortion. So, and I start reading this story and I start hearing many different cases with some things in common. So the first thing was lack of information. We had some information that they did not have, and it was easy information to have. It was just Google the right places. But how do you Google the right places if we never talk about abortions? actually, when I start working at this, all my friends start asking me things regarding this because it's something that we know that exists, but we really don't have much information in our daily life. The second thing was fear. All of them thought that they would die. All of them thought that abortion was super unsafe. And something like, just to start giving some tips in how safe an abortion pills are safer than Viagra.
That's a great reference.
Yeah. And then you think about the fact that abortion pills, especially one of them, mifepristone, took 50 years to be approved in places like Japan, while Viagra took them something 4 years to be approved. Mm. Why? And then the other thing that they had in common, they felt alone. All of them, they feel alone. They feel that they could not talk this with their partners, that they could not talk this with their friends, their families. And then the abortion was a hard secret. And I start to understand many things that I have heard about abortion in my life. So it was okay. I also would have these fears if I would not have this information. But I also would feel that abortion was, yeah. I would also feel abortion as a bad experience if I could not talk with anyone that I could trust. So I realized that they were not regretting the abortion decision, because when someone took this decision, as I said at the beginning, I don't like to say that it's a choice, because most of the time it's a need. And they take these decisions, especially when we talk about a global south, that we talk about poverty, climate change, that something is affecting a lot of reproductive rights decisions nowadays, war. They are not deciding, oh, I want to have a kid now or not. They are needing not to bring another life, because most of the times you already have kids that depends on them, or they live in conditions where there are no raw water. So how are they going to bring a life there? Or they don't have enough food, or they are living like drastic climate change moments. So it's not a decision in terms that you decide with all your free willing. It's a decision that you take in order of a need, of a context.
So I want to ask you about that need. Obviously, you've spoken about women not knowing their rights, women fearing, you know, the fear of danger or of having an abortion and of ending their pregnancy. Today, you're working for an organization, and you have been to, you know, to try and change those conversations and elevate them. Do women today, compared to where your story began in 2006, do you think that there is a shift, that women are understanding more what's available to them, or in those rural communities, does that stigma, does that fear sort of still lead in these decisions as it did, I guess, you know, 10 or 15 years ago?
Well, I think there is a shift. But I would not say that this chip is totally, I would not see this chip as a linear progress. I would see this chip as maybe an spiral and maybe movements around. Because, well, I'm Colombian, and in 2026, abortion, that we were one of the 4% countries in the world where abortion was totally banned. Nowadays, our law is one of the most progressive in the world. Abortion is totally decriminalized up to 24 weeks. And after the 24 weeks, the person can get an abortion in the three grounds that I mentioned before. A rape case, if the life of the pregnant person is at risk, or if the fetus is not going to have a viability after after born. So there is a shift in law. Especially, I feel there is a shift in law in Latin America. There is a shift in opinions. When abortion was decriminalized in Colombia, the opinion of people thinking that the decision of abortion would not be for a woman was lower than now. The last year, I saw a study on that it was surprising. It was something like 80% of the population in Colombia thought that no one should be criminalized for having an abortion. So it was, I think it's great. But at the same time, we are in a time where the political context of abortion in the United States is affecting many countries in the world. So we have this conference this year that it called the Conservative Conference Party or something, where they were reunited to the current president of Argentina, Trump, the son of the ex-president of Brazil, Bolsonaro, one representative from the party, the Vox of Spain, and they were discussing how to, they were discussing like topics against abortion, LGBTQ rights, women's rights as well. So, I don't see this process as linear. I see that we are advancing, but how we are advancing, we are also getting backlashes. And I feel that the key point here is to keep us informed, to try to inform the people around us. And as I mentioned before, always that is possible to bring the abortion topic to the table. Because people can get reactive when you talk about abortion. Because they also have fear because they don't know what you are talking about. And they feel they have these big words that usually come with the clickable titles of news. So and big words usually are full of a stigma. But when you start telling them, okay, most of the people that get an abortion is because of this, or there are moms who live in poverty. Like we have this number from Turkey that one out of three abortion seekers are already a mom there. Well, that doesn't not happen just in Turkey. Actually, that happened all around the world because like moms knows what, like know what to mean being a mom and all the resources that you need. People around you, money, energy, time that maybe they would not have and that would affect quality of life of their own, like the kids at the time. So you start to at this like to break down this taboo and these fears and all these questions. And then one of the things that I said, like abortion seekers, they were always full of fear because they thought that they would die. What they thought that they would die? Because usually we just get to this news of someone who died for an unsafe abortion. But we don't get the news of all the people who survive with safe abortions because there are so many and that's not news. And many of them, even they get the safe abortion in contexts where abortion is totally restricted. So there is also no space for talking about it. And that's what took me to my next step like in life, that it was the fact that it was okay. These people need information, but I'm not a healthcare provider. So I feel like, okay, there are people like the organization that I was working at the time that they are providing this access service of information. So this is where these people are doing a great job, but it's missing maybe a step back. That is how we can change the narratives around abortion so people can know where to seek for this information, because that was the main barrier first. There are people who are getting to these channels as the organization that I was working in that it called Safe to Choose, actually. That they keep provide safe information, but there are many people who even they're not gonna get to this access. So I was thinking, okay, so how you can provide an environment where abortion seekers, abortion providers, and general people, everyone who have the possibility to get pregnant can get information about abortion, and who have the possibility to get someone pregnant can get information about abortion, because it's not just about the uterus person responsibility. So I wanted to dive in this, and I wanted to make people realize that they were not alone, that there were thousands of women surviving every day for having abortions. And how do you do that? You present numbers. And how do you also change the narratives around a topic? You present numbers. You give arguments to people and I feel data in a topic that is so emotionally hot as in abortion, data help you to realize that it should not be a political debate. Data help you to realize that abortion is a healthcare service that affects public health, that affects reproductive justice, gender justice. So I decided to found an organization called Abortion Data that we focus on collect data that is currently available regarding abortion. We communicate this data in an easy way and more friendly manner. And like we try to be, we map also data gaps because we start to realizing that in some countries where we have this advances, like this, this progress in the law, we have more data. In other countries, we don't have anything, but that also means some conscious decision about who is financing this research, who is not, and why we are not financing this research. So we start mapping this data that it was missing. And then we start to work as a translator between the activist world, the academic world, and our daily world. So we realize, okay, as an activist, we know this about abortion. As an academic, they know all of this about abortion. How we can translate this into easy graphic, a easy language, a little bit more blog journalistic way, and a little bit more smiley designs that people realize that abortion is not so bad, that many of, like, the common feeling after an abortion is relief, and that abortion is just a medical treatment that is like any other medical treatment. So we start to making this, and we start to, like, our purpose is to be this translator that we can give the information to people. We are not telling them, change your opinion, become abortion activists, become pro-choice. No, we are giving people context so they can also have arguments for saying, I'm not going to get an abortion or I'm going to get one. But they are doing it using data.
That makes sense. I have to ask you something here. You sort of touched on the Global South and poverty and education and those sorts of things. But of course, in the last, I guess, 6 to 12 months, some of the news out of the US, which is, you know, theoretically a modern, evolved, developed nation, is still banning abortion, right? There are still predominantly men, ironically, but there are states in the US, which is a developed nation and should have the access to this data you're talking about. What's your take on that? How is it possible in 2023, 2024, that when there is this data out there that you're talking about, the, again, theoretically developed world still has an issue with banning what is a right for women's health?
So that's the point. Like, these questions, we had it as a team. Like, nowadays, organization, we are 13 people, and we used to have this kind of conversation between us. Because I feel like with topics as abortions, we have more questions than answers. But our standpoint on this is the fact that the data and the information is in hands of people with education to understand that data, is in hands of activists, while the information that the common people, like the common people have in their life, are mainly the political debates, which are not based, they are not data-driven debates, they are not facts-driven debates. They are mainly emotional-driven debates. And that's something that we are focused on that right now, because we realize with data, people can take decisions and can make opinions. But at the end, people decide is based on emotions. And these emotions are easy to move with this strong activation sentence that conservative parties are using. But not just that. When we talk about data in this topic, there are a super interesting study that shows that in the first 20 pages of Google, just seek for data visualization, that is the data that press, like, make the data more accessible to everyone. That is the data that usually we see in news, all these graphics and so on. But it's also the data that appeal to emotions. From 60 graphics, just 9 are building by feminist organizations, having context in the, like, not just the fact that it's because it's feminist, it's because they have basic things about data. Like, they give context about the numbers. They present the information complete, while the other ones are using the same data out of context. And when we talk about data, that should be a red flag, because that doesn't help you to understand what they are talking about, but that, and also that helps you to manipulate the opinion of people more. And I feel is what's happening in the United States is, like, the complete picture is in hands of just few people, and we need to translate that knowledge to everyone. And we need to bring this knowledge that is in activist hands to the most simple conversations. And that's something I see in many movements, especially social movements. Sometimes we complicate the things so much that people get bored before talking with us. Mm. So it's something about how we make this conversation and this data more pop, more accessible, and more fun. How we invite people to play with this instead of just talking about all the people who die. Why we don't just tell them all the people who are able to build their lives after having an abortion, and we present the positive side. And we present all, we make it less heavy.
a little bit less heavy. Yeah. And I think, you know, listening to you today, where you began as well, when you spoke about the woman who had cancer and wasn't able to access the treatment, I find as a woman myself, I know very little about the data, you know, but as a woman and as someone who reads the news, so little of the discussion around abortion is on this medical discussion that you're talking about, right? People that need an abortion to be able to survive cancer or have certain treatment or be able to feed their other children. To your point earlier, you know, if you already have five children and they are starving, you know, is it the right thing to do to have a sixth? I mean, again, it's up for debate, right? Because there's ethics, there's personal opinion. But as you said earlier, I think data that actually unpacks not just the safety of the procedures, but the need for the procedures, because the conversation in a public forum can become very much just around emotion, right? Should or should you not be able to terminate the life of a fetus or a baby, versus what is the impact of that on the woman who's already, you know, alive and living in the world and getting the medical treatment that she might need to be able to continue living. So I think, you know, data in that sense is certainly less in the public domain than, as you said, the emotional debate is.
Yeah. And then, for example, something that happens a lot is the data with lack of context. So the typical comment is, what she was using contraceptive to prevent that. And there are many things that for me, like, jump when someone make these kind of comments. First, it's not just her responsibility. That's something that many abortion organizations, they don't involve men, or they don't involve people without uterus in these conversations, because they say, okay, no uterus, not your opinion. And totally agree, the decision, the final decision is the person with uterus. But as an organization, we decide that we involve men, and we have cis men working in an organization, because it's also their responsibility. And we need to make also men accountable for these reproductive rights and these reproductive decisions as well. The second point there is, people think that getting contraceptive is super easy for everyone. Mm-hmm. And it's not the reality around the world. There are countries like, I don't know, for example, Honduras, that until this year, of the end of the last year, they approved the emergency pill. So we are not talking about simple access. Yeah. We are talking about strong gender norms in many countries, in many families, where a teenager cannot get contraceptive for lack of information or for fear that the parents know what they are having an active sexual life. And then also we are talking about other kind of gender-based violence, like many partners who prohibit the partner to use contraceptive because they think that they're gonna do it for being with another guy. They also, how data is lacking and information is lacking. And they also don't know the numbers of how many times contraceptive fail, because it fails. And also many times we have the data regarding how effective a contraceptive is, but that doesn't translate into the data of how effective the use of that contraceptive is. And there are some studies who have a focus on that, for example, regarding the pill, the contraceptive pills, like it can be effective in medical terms talking, but in the lifestyle of many women, it's really fitting. So yeah. So that's the use of the effectiveness. Like, and that's super, it's super relevant topic. And it's also, we come back to this thing of lack of data, lack of information, and also complex world to dive in. And that's what we try to do, is to break down this kind of thing. So we make like a more friendly graphics. We try to not to use these clickable titles, not in our information, not in our blog, not in our social media. We don't get to this thing of people die and that's happened, because we know that it could be more likable and we can get viral with this. But we want to emphasize on these narratives? No. We try to present the context. We know it's a topic that can be heavy. It's a topic that can be emotionally hard. But also we know that it's a topic that has a bright side of many people deciding over their lives. Because when we talk about abortion, we talk about full citizens. We talk about freedom, we talk about autonomy, and we talk about collective care. We are talking about the fact to give public health to almost half of the population who can get pregnant.
If there was one thing that you would like to this audience to really understand to really kind of debunk or to overcome, what would be the one thing that you really would like the world to understand?
Maybe that abortion is a healthcare service. I shall have this sentence. We say abortion is not up to debate.
Yeah, absolutely. And my last question for you is around the future of your work. So it sounds to me that you've made some, you know, fantastic progress in making this information accessible and, you know, easy to digest and understand and shareable. But what do you think comes next in this space? What is the sort of desperate need, whether that's with this information or it's slightly different use of it? What do you think comes next?
Well, at the point, we have mapped 12 countries around the world. We have one in Europe, one in a MENA region, Arab world. We have some in Latin America. We are working to map the data in the United States. But I feel like what is next is to improve our communication and to make more light channels of communication. As I mentioned before, we had a podcast. Also, we are now this year trying to continue the podcast, but it's about also funding, to get funds for doing this kind of job. But we want to make more fun channels, more interactive way to get to people. So if someone is hearing us and say, oh my goodness, I would like to do a video game and talking about this data, where we are up to it. We are down in all this idea. We want to make this information more playful, more accessible, if it's possible to take it online, to make it more offline. What are our dreams is to make street installations, because we think that, okay, we also sometimes assume that everyone can go to Google and search things, because we assume that everyone have free time and free internet the whole time, and also energy to charge devices to be seeking abortion information, but that's not reality. Mm-hmm. So we'd love to have free installations with this data around the world. That's for us, the next step is how we can improve our communication and how we can still making us questions or how we make this information more accessible and how we can continue collaborating in all these debates to giving the people arguments. Because that's also the point. Like, I'm not here to tell everyone, let's agree with abortion. I'm even just telling them, I'm going to give you the tools so also you can disagree with better arguments. And we can elevate the level of discussions that we are having regarding abortion.
What an amazing goal. I love that sentence, to elevate the quality of the discussions we're having. I think that is such, and you know, in this case, obviously for the show today, we're talking about abortion rights, but I feel like that is such a powerful sentence in so many of the kind of themes and tumultuous debates that we're having around the world, which is how do you just create more information so the quality of that conversation is actually, you know, elevated to, as you said, being driven by data and information and not just, you know, politics or opinion. So listen, I wish you so much luck with that. I also hope to see your street installations in my city or any city sometime soon. The show is predominantly anonymous, and we do that, as I said at the beginning, to protect from unconscious bias, but also to allow women, men, anybody to share their story without repercussions should they want to. But of course, it is entirely up to you. If you would like to share your name, your location, the name of your business, you are more than welcome to do so.
Yeah, perfect. So I'm Lina Lopez, and I just do it, you know, because I feel like when we talk about abortion and abortion stigma, something that I mentioned the whole conversation was to break the secret. So let's work my talk. Our work is called Abortion Data. You can find our website in abortiondata.org. Also, we are in Instagram and as abortion.data. All our content is in English and the native language of the country that we are working in. So we have members in US, Canada, Colombia, Brazil, Germany, Netherlands, Nepal, and Egypt. We are a feminist and transnational organization. We love to have conversations, collaborations, and everyone who hear this conversation and have questions, want to have a debate, we are always open for doing that in our social media, in our email, everywhere. And currently I'm based in Brazil, where abortion is highly restricted and where disinformation is super important, because As I said before, always with these restrictions, the most affected are the most vulnerable. So it's a country where we have high numbers of unsafe abortion, and especially we have high numbers of death between Black women, calls for unsafe abortion. So, well, I think that was the questions I answered. I'm super glad to have this opportunity to share and to talk about abortion in another space. I love it. And I hope that I have not been talking so long.
No, I think you did a wonderful, wonderful job at sharing your passion, your story, and your work. And it just strikes me as unbelievable, to be honest, that in 2024, we are still facing countries, you know, like Brazil, where you said you are right now, where there are such restrictions on women's rights. And at what point do governments really get to decide what we do with our bodies? I'm going to leave that there before we start again, because Lina, we could debate that for another hour. But that's where I would like to end today. For everybody listening, thank you for joining another episode of Me, Me, You, You. The goal of the show is to spread empathy just by tuning in. So hopefully by listening to Lina's story today, regardless of your opinion and what you believe around abortion and rights of women, you have heard another opinion. You have been able to empathize with a voice, with a perspective from the other side of the world. So thank you very much for being here. You can find us across social media. And Lina, thank you again for sharing your time and your empathy with us today.
Thank you so much. It's amazing the work you do, and it really resonates with me and with us when you mentioned this idea of having more empathetic conversations. So
thank you for joining us today on Me, Me, You, You. This episode is one in a series that has been designed to create empathy in our world. If you would like to join us on the show, please click on www.joinmemeyuyu.com or follow us across social media at MemeYuYu Show. I believe that the more the world talks about empathy, the more empathy the world will have. And I hope that this show is the beginning of doing just that.